not everyone wants to be gay, and there are places out there that can help you. I mean, some people are just athletes, some people are just cheerleaders or, you know, smokers with a grudge, or just a very butch-looking straight woman. And if that's you, then maybe you should go to a conversion camp. It might really, really help. In this episode, we discuss the movie But I'm a Cheerleader. Join us as we talk about the ex-gays? Pre-ex-gays. The ex-gays in training.
There's never a final straw. There's always more. Hey, welcome to In Media Less, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
I'm Val, and this is new, and I love it.
I did it last time, too.
I know, but second time is still pretty new.
Okay. That one I read in the book House of Leaves by a guy with a long name that I can't remember right now. It is in one of the footnotes. Anyway... Today, we are discussing the 1999 teen romantic comedy film, But I'm a Cheerleader / like camp cult classic, I would call it, directed by Jamie Babbitt, starring Natasha Lyonne, Clea DuVall, RuPaul, and Kathy Mariah, I don't know how to say her last name, Morarity, gosh. Freaking names. I should have practiced this, looked up how you say it. Regardless, and also Dante Bosco, aka Zuko, is in it. So I've seen this movie like 4 times, and I feel like every time I just have forgotten everything about it the next time I've seen it.
Really?
I mean, it's a very simple story, but I don't remember any of the details. Like, I was like rewatching it, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about the two gay dudes who like are the ex gays, and then I forgot about the fact that her son is like very flamboyantly gay, and I forgot, I don't know, just it's just like all these little details that I just completely forgot about, even though I saw it like a year ago, maybe, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is not my experience, because okay. This is the first time I've watched it.
Yeah, this is the first I've seen it a gazillion times. Oh, you're going to have to filter out the sound of my water bottle opening and making a very loud snapping noise, so enjoy that. But what were your thoughts? So sorry, you are a cheerleader virgin, so get us started.
Well, after that sentence, sure. We have already discussed this, but I don't know a lot of things about American queer media.
Prior to, yeah, I was gonna say 2000s. Prior to about 2015.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as that, but this thing is hilarious, and it aged so good.
I completely agree.
It, like, every joke hits. It has very modern humor, which is so weird, but also like really awesome. And this is what I wanted from They/Them.
That was what I was going to compare this to. So I'm so glad you brought up They/Them, because it's got a very similar vibe. Like, it's a conversion therapy story, and...
where all the teachers are queer.
Yes.
By all the teachers, I mean the one teacher and her son, and RuPaul.
Yes.
And there's no murder.
I love RuPaul in this, by the way.
Yeah.
As Mike.
I've never seen him in anything except for GIFs on Tumblr, I will say.
It is, I mean, you know, like, I've seen him out of drag before, of course, but it's just weird to see him being quite so butch, or at least trying to be so butch. Yeah.
I don't even know the guy, but, like, it felt weird.
Also, did you know that RuPaul's cousin is Cory Booker?
No, I did not.
I just saw that on the Wikipedia page. It says relatives Cory Booker cousin. What the heck? Now, there's a 6 degrees of separation that I never imagined. Anyway. Oh, yes. RuPaul is wonderful in this.
Where does bacon fit into this?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Has RuPaul done anything with Kevin Bacon? Or has... Who is Cory Booker dating? He's dating some actress. I don't remember. Rosario Dawson. Maybe Rosario Dawson has done something with Kevin Bacon. Anyway.
Okay, can I just say, I finally understand why Melanie Lynskey is a queer icon. Because I never knew why, but now I understand. Okay, it was really interesting.
I had to look up who she is. Yes, she's the one who's kind of the, like, trying too hard girl at the camp. Yeah.
Very, very clear. I mean, all of them are very clearly gay.
Yes.
But, yeah, she's also in The Last of Us. And she's in Yellow Jackets, which I have not watched.
Oh, she was in Last of Us.
Yeah, and she was really cool in there.
Okay.
Real problematic, just like a lot of other characters. But yeah.
Sorry. I'm drinking a lot of water. I'm just thirsty for some reason. Anyways.
So was everyone in this movie.
Yeah, so was everyone in this movie. Okay, I wanted to start. I'm going to start with some, like, things I noticed on my rewatch, and I wanted to know what your thoughts on them. First of all, okay, the set design. Can we talk about that?
It is so pretty. It is very interesting.
Okay, very pretty. I would compare it to Barbie, though.
Yes.
Like, there's this very, like, artificialness to it. Mm-hmm. Like the program house where the X-gay
like
house,
the pink room.
Yeah, everything is like, and then there's like the bathroom that has like this like dandelion, it's daisies as like, it's just like a wall of like plastic daisies. And mm-hmm. I feel like the whole house, and then like the men are like chopping wood and they're using like a baby blue axe, and there's just so much like primary colorness to this whole production that is very, and I kind of love it because it puts it in this one. They do that to like enforce the like gender dichotomy that they're socially constructing in the film, but also it kind of gives it this otherworldly element of like, this is not real in some way, like this is like the thing that's being forced upon these children is not like, it's artificial. And I think the set design really reinforces that when you compare it to the other place. Although then like they go to the XX gay house, and that house is just like all rainbow.
Literally.
Yep. Yes, like everything is rainbow.
Including Dante Bosco.
Comes in wearing like toe-to-tip rainbow, which I mean, that's a drip right there, but yeah, it's just, I don't know, set design is just fascinating. I feel like you could write, like, a dissertation on, like, the set design in this movie.
It's very interesting, but I also found that, actually, like, we mentioned how the gay guy's house is, like, all rainbow.
Larry and Lloyd, we should, instead of calling them the gay guys.
It reminds me of Frank and Bill.
Yeah.
So
I'm wearing the shirt, by the way.
Oh, I feel like you're always wearing that shirt. I'm glad you like it.
It's in my rotation. It's a very comfortable shirt. Like, even so, Val will post a picture, I guess, of the shirt somewhere. Val got me this very good shirt after I sent her it online. It was like a meme shirt.
It was a meme.
It was a meme, and Val bought it for me, and it you know, devoid of the fact that it's a meme, and that, like, multiple people, when I've been wearing it out, have been, like, commenting on it, which is always funny. But it's just also a really comfortable shirt, and also now I'm having flashback. Okay, can I tell a very big aside of a story?
Absolutely. Like,
I'm going totally off the rails here. So speaking of rails, while I was visiting my family in Washington, we did this thing called rail riding. And it's like, you go on this abandoned rail line, and they've got these like little vehicles, like pedal driven vehicles that you can take, and you just go out and you like pedal on this old railroad track, and you get to see like some nature, and then you pedal back. And it's called rail riding, I guess.
Okay, that's cool.
It is cool. But I go to this, And, you know, I'm expecting to do a bit of exercise, so I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and, you know, I was doing a little stretching beforehand, and I think the guy who runs the place comes out and sees the shirt that I'm wearing, which is my opossum shirt, which our friend Sarah gave to me, and it's got an opossum, and it says, like, dead inside, but still screaming. And the guy sees that. And for the next, like, 20 minutes, I have to hear him tell this story about how he rescued this opossum. And it's not, like, a bad story, but just the way he tells it is so, like, kind of off-putting. Because he keeps talking about the fact, like, he's like, oh, yeah, I would have drowned it, but it was so cute. Like, he said something weird like that. It was so off-putting. He kept saying stuff like that. And then he's like, yeah, and then she lived to be three, but then she was getting sick, so I took her out and shot her. And I was like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it was just like, and then after that, my brother, Jason, comes up to me, and he's like, I bet you wish that you didn't wear that shirt, right? And I was like, more than anything in the world, I did not need to hear the opossum, you know, murder story. But the rail riding was great. So highly recommend rail riding. Just don't wear your opossum shirt. Anyway.
That's a great story. Of a bad story.
It's one of those things was just like going to live with me for the rest of my life as like that happened. It's just one of those things that happens to you, like you experience, and like it has no larger bearing on the rest of your life. Like, I'm not gonna lose sleep over it, or I'm not gonna sit there and ponder it. I mean, there's definitely things like that in my life, like mysteries that I sometimes stay up late at night wondering about, but like, it's not one of those things. It's just this small burden that I'm going to carry of the weird opossum story.
Well, with that little segue.
Yes.
Back to Lloyd and Larry's.
This is our best episode ever. Okay. Larry and Lloyd. Lloyd and Larry.
Yeah, the gay guys.
Yes.
It's very late. And
Val, it's 9 p.m.
I am exhausted.
How old are you?
I think I'm 80.
Okay.
But I felt that even though their house was very obnoxiously rainbowy in like the campiest and best way, it also felt very natural.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the club, which is our other, set. And that club also felt very natural. So I really like the contrast between the fakeness of the camp compared to the infrequent moments of queerness that pushed through from the outside. It was very interesting.
I do agree. The one thing about the club, though, is that it's one of those cases where it is so clearly just a set dressed up to look like a club, I guess.
And it looks like a lesbian bar. That's what they all look like. It's just like a room.
There is something about the walls, I think, that I was just like, it wasn't, it was interfering with my suspension of disbelief at some level.
Interesting.
And then and then someone's going to send us something and it's going to turn out like it was actually shot in a real lesbian bar or something, and I'm going to feel like a real idiot. But like, I don't know.
It was Cubbyhole.
Yeah, no, I would recognize the Cubbyhole. Wait, no, I should not. That feels wrong to say that. I've only been there like once or twice. Both times were kind of disappointing. Anyway.
It's fine. It's whatever.
It's always so crowded.
It's interesting.
The bathrooms were really gross. It's like, come on.
I don't like going to outside of the house bathrooms, so I don't think I've been in that bathroom.
Well, it's just,
I can imagine.
The bathroom at the bar we were at on Pride was not nearly as bad.
Okay.
It wasn't great, but it was not nearly as bad. But what do? You just hold it? Like,
oh.
You gotta go sometimes.
Well, if you gotta go, you gotta go.
Yeah.
But I'm
bada bing, bada boom.
Exactly. This is a weird conversation.
I don't know. This is just a weird episode. The energy that I'm bringing to this, I don't know why. Anyways, so Yes, the bar and the house, the Larry and Lloyd.
Everything is artificial.
Yes.
But there's just something a little more natural about the queer spaces versus the camp.
And I will say the camp also, like, I feel like every scene they were told to look, like, pretty uncomfortable, or, like, maybe the furniture was deliberately uncomfortable, because I just feel like every single scene, they all look like
they... I think the beds were literally, like, plastic.
Yeah, they all look like they have sore, like, I don't know, like... It just feels like, you know, like when you see a friend who's clearly uncomfortable in a seat and they're like squirming and stuff. I feel like that was the energy all the actors were giving every time there was a scene of them like sitting on furniture in the in the camp.
And also this movie zooms in a lot on the face.
Yeah.
Like there's just, they're shoulder cracked.
Oh, I thought that was you like snapping your finger. Like
nope. That's just my bones.
Okay.
But there are a lot of shots of just like face centered and very up close, which is also uncomfortable. And they kind of stare, especially Natasha Lyonne, who plays Megan.
Yeah.
And like that, I don't know, I just really like those little decisions that directors make.
The cinematography in general was excellent, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of shots are framed really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying to think. The shot of the house when they're saying grace, there was something about it that, like, just stuck with me. And I don't know why. This is such a small scene, but it captured it really nicely.
Because it's going from, like, this wide shot of all of them at the table to then just Natasha Lyonne, and then back to that full table. Every time the father speaks and says, like, oh, to be natural and straight and not gay. And then it cuts back to her, and she's like, this is very oddly specific. And yeah, they really make uncomfortable, but also familiar. I feel like it's a very familiar discomfort.
Yeah.
It's like a nostalgic sort of discomfort in this movie that... works really well.
I totally agree. I totally was paying attention to what you just said and not zoning out for some reason.
It happens.
Okay, let me ask you this. Who is your favorite character?
I mean, honestly, Rock.
Okay, the son. As like a
little comic relief, but in terms of like actual characters.
Yeah.
I really like, was it like Shanae? Is that her name? The goth girl. Yeah.
Sinead Lauren, according to Wikipedia.
I think Sinead. It's one of them weird Irish-like words that... It's like a Sean.
Sinead.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really like her. I think that she has a lot of parallels with Megan, but she's made out to be a villain, which is kind of interesting, because, like, we have Megan rat out... Dante Basco's character, Dolph, and, was it Clayton?
I think it was Clayton. I don't remember all the boys. They kind of, I don't know, their names all blurred together, aside from Joel. Yeah,
they're not that important. But yeah, like, Megan rats out two of the boys pretty early on in the movie, and Dante Basco gets, like, kicked out.
Yeah.
And the other kid, I think it was Clayton. He gets sent to literally like solitary confinement in this dollhouse. He's literally in the doghouse.
Yeah.
That's made out to be like a dollhouse. It's weird. I like it. It's
such a weird thing. Again, it's one of those like weird things that feels just like so surreal in a movie that's mostly fairly grounded. It's just weird. Yeah.
There are very liminal moments of nonsense.
Yeah.
But basically she does that like in the first third of the movie or something. I don't actually know. It's a very short movie.
Yeah, but it felt like 80 minutes.
Yeah, but it felt very early on. And then later, Shanae does the same thing. She tells Mary that Megan and Graham have been canoodling and Megan gets kicked out. But that second decision, it just, even though it's literally the same situation, there's more malice in it And I just found that to be very interesting how they framed it. Because for Megan, it was actually a natural disgust, which is interesting because we never get back to that in a sense. Versus Shanae, for her, it was the fact that she likes Graham.
Right. And she's kind of...
And she's getting her comeuppance. Kind of like, you guys deserve it because I don't like you, Megan. And I don't know, there's just something very interesting about how certain actions from certain light are perceived differently. And even though in theory, Megan being actually disgusted should be a worse offense, right? Especially in a movie about queer people.
Yeah.
But I guess the fact that she grows so much throughout the movie, it reframes it in a different light of, oh no, she did that, but there's a lot of, like, self-hatred in there as well.
Yeah.
And just the unwillingness to accept certain facts about herself. It's very interesting. It's very, very clearly made by cast and crew that, if not queer themselves, just deeply understand it.
I do know that the director...
Is a queer, yeah.
Yes. And obviously Clea DuVall is. Mm-hmm. Natasha Lyonne, despite being a gay icon, is not herself gay, I believe.
She is not.
RuPaul, of course. Mink Stole, who plays Nancy.
Which one is that Nancy?
The mom. Yeah, the mom is... I don't know that she's queer, but she does a lot of stuff with John Waters.
Hmm. Interesting.
So she's like queer adjacent, is how I'd put it. And Dante Bosco, again, is another guy who I think is not queer, but is queer adjacent.
Yeah. Like, it very much is a film that was lovingly made, especially the fact that it's in 99.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very old movie, and it holds up better than
Ouch.
I think. I was four. It's 24 years ago.
I was 12, but...
You were a baby. You were a baby child. Zach is older right now than you were in 99.
Fair.
That is it. That is a baby. Baby
yeah.
Chloe.
I mean, I guess I was 11 when it came out.
That's even more of a baby.
Because it came out in September, so...
But yeah, like, this is very clearly a project that was well-loved. And a lot of care was put into it. Like, when I watched Birdcage, it was funny, and there were a lot of little moments that I was like, yeah, queer people wrote it, but it still didn't age that well. Versus this...
I do think Birdcage has some very problematic moments.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's very watchable. It's
yes, it's watchable.
It's better than a lot of movies. Like,
it's really funny, and... I think there's an argument to be made for the fact that, like, Birdcage, I think it's really important as for younger queer people to, like, take stock of their history. I think one of, like, the formative experiences for me in college was reading And the Band Played On, which is all about, you know,
the
early AIDS crisis in the 1980s and, like, just... The way it's written and all the accounts you get and perspectives, I think, really helped me understand what it means, I guess, to be a queer person in the context of the 2000s and 2010s versus, you know, what it was in the 80s and 90s. And I think that's really important. And so for that reason, I think The Birdcage is definitely worth watching. And also because it's Robin Williams, although... He does not, you know, his co-star, Nathan Lane, steals the show. So,
absolutely, a million percent.
Anyway, but yes, I agree. This movie is a lot, like, they even have, who's the character who's, there's the one girl who's like, I'm actually straight, I just.
Yeah, Jan.
Jan. It's just like, I'm
looks
straight.
Looks very gender non-conforming, very
yeah.
much.
I mean, I think... Today, she might be portrayed as kind of a non-binary character.
Yeah.
But, like,
Maybe she's not.
Just,
she's straight.
Maybe not.
She's
just, she like, says, legitimately yeah, she a says, person. She says she's straight and she just likes to have short hair and she likes to wear baggy clothes.
And like, I feel like that character is actually kind of interesting to have in like,
I feel loved like, that moment.
Yes. Yeah,
extremely refreshing.
It feels very out of place for like something from the 90s where I feel like so many gay characters are portrayed as either kind of stereotypical kind of gay character or they're deliberately someone who is designed to break a stereotype. And meanwhile, Jan's just doing her own thing, which I think it's actually a very fascinating character. Although she's doesn't get a ton of screen time, you know, she's there for maybe like, I don't know, I think maybe she gets maybe 10 lines across the whole movie, but like
she's fairly tertiary, but she is present.
Yeah.
And I honestly, when that scene came on, it was a very, very interesting thesis of the moment. Like, I feel like, especially in the queer community, there's such an emphasis on labels and appearing to be a certain way. And just visually, depending on how you look, there are certain groups that will very openly take you in, but only because of the stereotype of it all, right?
Yeah.
And having that scene in there, for some reason, was not necessarily eye-opening because, you know, we're human beings with the concept of critical thinking, but just the fact that like it's a scene that's usually reversed, like usually we the gays have that moment,
yeah,
right, and to see a person who is perceived as extremely queer basically come out and say that I look like this but that is not my truth, and because of that, my whole life is affected by it, by that visual representation, despite how comfortable I am with it. Like, it's a very familiar argument, especially in a lot of queer media.
Right.
It's the gay character that has this speech. So seeing a character who passes for gay kind of show how it negatively impacted her life, and we never once even think about that in the entire movie, it's a very interesting reversal. I think there's a lot to it there.
Yeah.
I really love that scene. It's so cool. And we don't see her again after that, do we? I don't think she leaves camp. She just goes away, which I feel is such a, like, it was a weirdly neutral but also happy ending for her.
Yeah.
Like, this camp did help her. Like, it legitimately did help her because she is straight. And, like, it wasn't handled in a very dramatic way. It didn't undermine the tone of the movie in any way. It felt very in place. I don't know. Yeah. I honestly, like, regret not watching it earlier. It's a really good movie, and it's a wonder that not more people are talking about it. That's crazy.
I mean, it's a cult classic. I feel like it was, like, first time I saw it, I believe, was in college. I watched the queer union at my school had a public showing of it. And that's the first time I saw it. So I feel like, you know, it makes the rounds in some ways. I just, yeah, I don't know why. Also, by the way, did you like the reference to Melissa Etheridge?
I did. I understand. I get it.
Yeah.
I've heard like a song by her before. I just don't know. You know? I just don't know. I'm sorry, whatever. I'm not a learned gay.
Whatever helps you, I don't know, sleep at night, I guess.
Not knowing. Yeah.
I don't think there was any Melissa Etheridge in the soundtrack for the movie.
I don't think so.
But I enjoyed the music. It had
I did know a lot of the songs
by Dressy Bessie, and I've always really liked Dressy Bessie.
It was very whimsical. I think the whole movie is extremely whimsical.
Yeah.
Also, I think what it does really, really correctly, because of like the fact that this is a comedy and it's not supposed to be dramatic or sad, there's a lot of homophobia in it. Like, a lot of homophobia in this movie, but it's all handled so accessibly. Like, when we watched They Slash Them, I was like, I get it. They hate the gays. I understand. Like, move on. And they just never moved on, right? Here, it's very much part of the story. It is hilarious. It's just, I don't know, just, they just made a really great tone for this movie. And it holds up the whole time. And I love that it's short.
So have I ranted about movie comedies before on this podcast? I forget. I will do my rant.
Maybe once, but I will do my rant. Yeah.
I do not like movie comedies writ large, like categorically, because I think it's the wrong format for it. I think comedies are best when they are presented in the like 30-minute episodic format. I don't know, like, yeah, sure, I've gone to theaters and enjoyed a comedy movie every once in a while, and there are exceptions, like, you know, Monty Python, Holy Grail, and all that jazz, but please tell me you've seen that, by the way.
I just don't remember it very well.
I just had this moment of, like, I'm mentioning a movie from the 1970s, or Val is not...
I like the Spanish Inquisition one a little bit more.
That is from the TV show.
Oh, was it? Maybe I just watched that one episode. I don't know. It was really funny and silly.
Yeah. Well, the Spanish, I don't know if it was in any of those. Because they also did the movies that were just like, I don't know. Like, they had one movie that I think that was just a bunch of sketches that they kind of put together in a loose story. But anyway, so I think this is one of those where it's like, it's a good comedy movie. One reason why it is because it does not overstay its welcome. Like, I feel like if it were 30 minutes longer, oh my god, it would probably have sucked.
I like, honestly do believe that, yeah.
It is the right length for a comedy, and like it tells the story that it needs to tell. It makes all the right jokes. Like, I'm just, part of my issue with the movie length comedy is that sometimes it belabors the point a little too much, because there's only so much plot, and so they try and force in more jokes to make up for the fact that there isn't that much plot. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this does not do that. Like, it's got a good flow to it, is what I'm trying to say. And it's a good movie comedy as someone who does not like movie comedies.
Yeah, it's it feels like what the genre should be.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a question for you.
Okay. I was going to ask you a question, but go ahead.
No, it's my turn.
Okay.
To ask you a question that you asked me 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
Who's your favorite character?
I mean, I wish I could say Natasha Lyonne as Megan, because I love Natasha Lyonne so much. But I'm going to have to say I really love Mary Brown.
Yes.
The person, the mom, not mom, but like the woman who leads the therapy camp. She is just like, she's got big Dolores Umbridge energy, and I just kind of love it. And I don't know, just like how I like how they portray her as like an obsessive neat freak, and like she's constantly cleaning things, and
I was just gonna say, I love the little undertone of her being someone who graduated this camp.
Yes, like there's this implication that she's also attracted to women. Like, she makes all, like at the beginning when she's talking to Megan and like describes attractive women, and it's almost like she kind of is enjoying this.
It's very clearly something that she experiences. And not only that, but a lot of the like training exercises, I guess, that they do is cleaning.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's always cleaning, she does the same thing that they show the girls doing.
Right. So it's like she's participating in it on some level.
It's very interesting.
Yes.
And I think like the moment that it is confirmed is when Lloyd and Larry, the gay guys,
I'm glad you have to add that in every time.
When they mentioned that they were both, like, all three of them were campers that became counselors, and they eventually left because, once again, all of them are queer. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I just, it's honestly mind-boggling how in the know this movie is. Like, it feels very much of the community.
Yes.
And it's interesting. And I feel like this is what I always pictured good queer media to be like.
Yep.
And it's very difficult to find because, like, I think a lot of us queer people, we get, like, either too used to our queer circles or, I mean, like, there's a lot of bad stuff that others say to us. So we're kind of, like, a lot of the times negative as well.
Yeah.
And this is a very positive reaction to homophobia. Like, I don't know, it's just very refreshing and interesting, and I kind of wish there was more of this.
Totally agree. Okay. I'm going to ask, I don't know, now I'm going to be
ask
mean.
Ask a question. Okay.
I'm going to be mean. Okay. Megan and Graham are not going to be together for too long,
absolutely,
am I right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
it's like a two-week relationship.
It is most. So doomed. This is the most doomed relationship. Like, there is no way that Megan, as she's portrayed, is going to put up with Graham for more than a couple weeks.
No, she's ambitious and she's going to go to, like, college and become legally blonde or something. And Graham is going to get by for a little bit. Until she figures things out. I don't know what else to say.
Graham is going to go like one or two ways, which is like she's going to be like a bartender who like...
Yeah.
She, like a really cool bartender uh-huh. who like is really worldly and has all these cool stories.
Uh-huh.
Or she's going to... I was about to swear. She's going to screw up really badly and do something really stupid. And then she's going to realize that, like, she needs to get her life together. And I'm sorry, because Benny is rubbing the microphone right now. So there's going to be cat rubbing noises. So, Benny, you don't have to, Benny, buddy, you don't have to make love to the microphone. It's okay.
Tell her to do that after the podcast.
I know you love Clea DuVall. I know you're a big Clea DuVall fan. Who isn't? Yeah, okay. Come. She's trying to bite me if I try and stop her from rubbing the microphone.
Yeah, I'm just gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah. Okay. So she finished. So or Graham is going to screw up in some way, realize her life is a mess, and like I don't know, become like an art professor at a prestigious liberal arts college. Like I see it going. It's like. One of those two ways to just totally overanalyze this character that I know nothing about aside from the fact that she is gay and smokes.
You're 1,000,000% correct. Like, okay. 1,000,000%, absolutely. I think we can say a lot about a lot of these characters.
Yeah.
Because they're very stereotypical.
Yes.
But also there's a lot of, like, very excellent subtlety in this movie.
Oh my god, Benny, no chewing on wires.
Benny, are you the reason that Chloe's mic is not good?
I don't know why she's developed this thing for wires all of a sudden, but it's not good. Anyway, sorry.
Also, Rock and Mike, 1,000,000% have just the most tumultuous relationship for decades to come.
Oh, yeah. They're just dancing around. They're getting there.
Yes.
They are a slow burn. If ever there was one.
Yeah. And Dolph and Clayton, I feel like, are going to have a pretty good relationship. I don't know if they'll last, honestly, but they're not as toxic as Megan and Graham are.
Yeah. They're not long for this world. I don't mean they're going to die. I mean the relationship is not long for this world. Yes. They're going to die.
I'm gonna
bury these gays. Okay, any other I don't know, I feel like I'm out of things to talk about.
Well, okay, you know what's very interesting?
Okay.
Clea DuVall doesn't really, I don't know, like she didn't stand out to me in this movie like she usually does.
I feel like she's just there to be the object of,
like,
Megan's desire.
Yeah.
And I feel like she spends the entire movie in one single mood. Like, it's just like, I am smoking.
And I'm brooding.
And I'm brooding and smoldering like my cigarette. Like, that's her whole vibe.
I think the most lively she was is when Mary makes her and Rock do the Adam and Eve thing, which is so uncomfortable.
And also, like, hilarious, but so very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like that scene is where she really stood out because of how uncomfortable is not the word for it. There should be, there's, like, a different word that's stronger.
Let me ask Google. Word stronger than uncomfortable.
Just disassociated.
Oh god,
really.
Google has an AI now.
Oh.
It just says generative AI is the experiment. Okay. Here's one. What about agonizing?
Nah. I think just disassociated. I think both her and Rock were just kind of not there. I don't know. But another time that it was a very similar thing is when she is pretending to have a crush on Joel. Like,
yeah.
Those two times where she was not, when she was trying to be not gay, that's where she stood out, which is hilarious. But also, she, like, this movie made me think of her role in The Faculty. I liked her in The Faculty a whole lot. And she played the same character, Smokey and Broody.
Yeah.
And it worked there really well, especially with, like, Elijah Wood being like, ah, the whole time, you know? But that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about But I'm a Cheerleader.
We're talking about the butt movie.
The butt movie. Also, the introduction with the cheerleading routine.
Okay,
how
that
daring.
Was just... That was... I don't know how daring or just,
it was
like...
really weird, but also, like, how daring. It's... very clearly sexualizing these cheerleaders, but for some reason it didn't feel very sexy. You know what I mean? Like, it felt woman-gazy, which is hard to do.
It wasn't very male. There are a few shots that I would say are a little male-gazy, like the shot of the cheerleaders on the school bus and hanging out the window. I felt like that, maybe, but you're right. Like, the introduction is a little woman-gazy. Although I will say, having kind of the horny, I think I can say that word, introduction, I don't know, I feel like that's very, like, that is a peak 90s teen comedy trope right there.
Yeah, it's American Pie-esque, but once again, like, usually in those moments...
I'm surprised
moments,
you know that one.
I know a lot of movies.
I'm just gonna give you so much crap for this for the rest of your life, just FYI.
I know, and I'm ready for it.
Okay. this is what you get when you don't come to D&D.
I'm sorry. I might be able to make it on Friday, maybe.
I might be late. I understand if you don't, you know, because it is Sabbath, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to commit, but I want to commit. Anyway.
No, it's fine.
It didn't feel very nasty. And a lot of times these sort of movies kind of like those scenes with like the focuses on shirts that are a little see-through and skirts flying and whatever, like a lot of times it feels very kind of like gross and nasty in a way. This didn't at all, and I'm always like, I don't even know how they did that. Like, I was trying to, this sounds weird, I wasn't like rewatching the scene or anything, but like thinking back, I'm trying to think of like camera shots or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it, how they did the like little distinction between it being gross and it being kind of like, this is Megan's reality. The cinnamon photography is just really cool.
Yes.
The thesis of this episode specifically. You know what I like? The fact that like her cheerleading friends, there were a couple that kind of turned away, but there's like extras in this movie. Like, her best friend was very nice about it, which was also refreshing.
Yeah.
When she took down that poster from her locker to bring to the intervention, like, it didn't feel like a gotcha. It felt like I really care for you and I think this will help, which is interesting.
Although, I got the impression that the best friend might be with her boyfriend on some level.
I didn't get that.
Because they're talking... Well, it's tough.
It It because... could be, but there's just, like, such a little focus on the boyfriend at all.
It's a real question of subtext of whether, it, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you could make an argument for it. But also, just the fact that she was really caring during the intervention, whereas a lot of the other teammates, like, literally turned away and didn't want her to touch them. It's a cool contrast. We don't really see that very often. Like, you know, the friend that accuses someone of being queer and that ruins the friendship is almost always the case. Here, the fact that she, like, was there with the parents, I don't know, there's just, like, a closeness there as well.
Yeah, and the parents at the end come around, so.
Yeah, especially the dad.
At the PFLAG meeting at the end.
But yeah, I think that even has a lot to do with why the homophobia doesn't feel that bad in this movie. I think the fact that a lot of it comes from a place of caring.
There is there is one scene where the F slur gets used.
Oh, they use the F slur a lot in this movie.
Yeah, which I guess is also a sign of the times, because if you were in school back then, man, did you hear that word a lot. Yeah.
But also, like, once again, it didn't feel gross in the movie. Like, it wasn't great, but it's like when a gay person says it, it's kind of like, all right, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it didn't feel gross at all. Like, I wasn't like, ooh, yikes. I wouldn't have done that in the script. Like, it was sparingly done and also kind of really funny.
Yeah.
Well, like, the sign, I'm not gonna say what was on the sign.
Right.
But that sign was hilarious. I don't know, it was just very funny use of slurs. I think Andre, like, the gayest of the boys, quote-unquote, like, the most flamboyant one at some point, also says something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just a lot of really, really funny moments that are just homophobic, but almost every single time it is said by queer people, and that makes it hilarious. Like, it's a very disarming sort of slur usage.
Yeah.
I also really like Andre. He's a very great character. Did he get kicked out, or?
I don't remember.
I think he just, like, didn't pass one of the tests or something.
Yeah, I think that was it.
And, I think, yeah, because he didn't pass, Mary kind of kicked him out. But at some point, he, like, turned to Megan and Graham and was like, you're not allowed to comfort me, you, like, gays. You can't say that to me. Because surprisingly, everyone there wants to, like, change. Except for Graham, who is just kind of there. But, like, I think that's what makes the difference. Because in They/Them, I think they try to do that. I don't know why we keep comparing these two movies.
No, they're good.
But they are so similar. I think
they're similar. That's why we keep comparing them.
Yeah, like in that movie, half of the people actually did want to be converted.
Yeah.
But it was so weirdly framed. Whereas here, I think all of them want to be converted. But, like, hilarity ensues sort of situation is happening. And, yeah, they did it really well. Chloe, I really like this movie. I don't know what else to say about it. It's just really good.
I don't have anything else to say. It's a good movie. You should watch it.
It's a good movie. And if you made it this far into the episode, I mean, like, it doesn't have a plot. Just watch it. It's great.
I mean, it has a plot, but it's just... It doesn't. You know what the story is going to be from the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's... Megan goes to conversion camp. Like, that's the plot.
And falls in love, and conversion camp fails.
Yeah, like, what did you expect, listener?
I don't know.
So yeah, if you made it this far into the episode and you have not watched it, open a tab in your phone, Google the movie, and then never open that tab again, ever, for years and years, until, like, you know, several months down the line, you start going through your 120 tabs, and you're like, hey, what's this? Huh, I have 90 minutes to kill, and you go on YouTube where it's free.
That was a very specific... So I'm guessing you do that with the tabs?
I have, like, 5 movie tabs on my phone right now that I haven't opened in, like, a year.
I find the use of tabs as, like, a bookmark fundamentally distressing on some level.
I never have tabs open on my computer. Like, after I'm done using the internet, everything gets closed down. But on my phone, absolutely not. It is a mess. I have like 80 fics open, and then like amongst those, there are just like tabs interspersed with random facts or things that I've had a conversation about with random people over the course of months.
Okay, I do this really weird, probably serial killer-esque thing where I, instead of like bookmarking where I am in a fic, I have a little notepad text file where I just keep a link to the current chapter I'm on.
That is the most unhinged and feral thing I have ever heard. Chloe, so
whatever
I did not to, I just, know you as a person, and I this have really shifts the view.
I have that text file on Dropbox so that I can get it from wherever.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know why I do it that way. It's really weird. I really love text documents. These little, like, I've got dozens of them where I just store things that I need to remember. It's like a desk full of papers, like little sticky notes, except they're just text files.
It's truly unhinged. That is the weirdest thing about you.
But where else am I going to store all this stuff?
In 80 tabs.
I don't want 80 tabs. I just want 80 weird text documents.
Well, that leaves me with a lot to think about, I think.
Okay. Val is going to send me to some kind of camp where they convert me into using tabs. Camp. Yeah, it's going to be Chrome tab conversion camp. I don't know.
A safari. You're going to go on a trip.
I'm going to go on a safari. Okay. I just got that new iPad and I really do not understand Safari on some level, but whatever.
It's just there.
It's just there.
It's under anyway, my thumb.
Anyway, any Anywho. Final thoughts on the Butt Movie, aka But I'm a Cheerleader?
It's really, really, really good. Like, it's really funny. And it has, someone's yelling, and it has a lot of really excellent queer themes that I feel like a lot of people in today's age are afraid to tackle for some reason, even though it's the reality. And it's really, really good. Do you have any final thoughts?
My final thought is that, I mean, it's 80 minutes. Just buck up and watch this movie. Come on, you can do it. I don't know why I'm doing, like, tough love with watching this movie, but I'm doing it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
Yeah.
It's free on YouTube.
Yeah. There's
Use a VPN if it's not.
Lowest barrier to entry possible here. Use the VPN to access it in a totally legitimate and legal way.
Exactly.
Wink. I should mention that we have social media. So
what?
We have a Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest, or an X. We're going to call it Twitter. Screw Elon Musk. It is Twitter. Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our Tumblr is
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
You can join our Discord server and talk about Baldur's Gate 3. Please tell us your thoughts on Baldur's Gate 3 and why Val is really unfortunate to have killed Lazel somehow.
Oh, quick thing. I restarted the game because I went on vacation and didn't play it for 2 weeks, and I started playing it again, and I just, like, forgot a lot of the quests I was on, and I was very confused and frustrated, so I just restarted it. So
okay.
I have her in my party now.
Good. Because she's awesome. Her romance is great. So you can join and tell us about your favorite Baldur's Gate 3 romance.
And we will eventually have an episode on it. Maybe even 2 or 3. Because I want to keep talking about that game.
Yeah, if Val
Chloe didn't know we were gonna have 2 or 3 episodes, I just dropped it on her. But
we're going to have 3 for Baldur's Gate 3. anyway, in our website,
I'm sorry to interrupt you one more time, but I know people have been emailing us. We're gonna get to those emails.
Oh, we've got emails.
It's
Val. You need to tell me.
I told you about it. I just haven't answered yet because we've been very busy. It's the ones that we've talked about.
Oh yeah. Yes.
If you're listening and you're like, "Is that my email?" It is your email. Well, I'll respond to it soon. I've just been busy, and Chloe's been busy, and we see you.
I've been traveling a whole bunch.
Me
and
too.
Val has also been traveling.
I've promise. Never in my life traveled, and all of a sudden this summer I've just like traveled, and Chloe's traveling, and we see you, friends.
Yeah, I'm going to Chicago next week. So.
Chicago.
Yeah. Old Chicago, not the pizza place. Our
the theater production.
Yeah. our website is inmedialess.com, and if you can email us and be ignored by us at inmedialess@gmail.com. Just kidding. Please email us, and we will read your email, and we love you. Thank you so much for tuning in.
And we'll see you in the next one.
And Clea Duvall bless you.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, "Hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, non-binary folk, and really queer people." Once again, thanks for listening, and we really appreciate you.